Welcome back for another helping of oysters, clams, and cockles presented by Bolin Media. I am Ross Bolin here with Barrett Dudley to discuss and review Jerry Seinfeld's new Netflix movie, Unfrosted.
Oh, the people are buzzing about this one, Ross.
Oh,
they
yeah.
are. They are. They're hot. They're hot on this one. Just earlier this morning, I went to my local HEB.
Okay.
Pop-Tarts just cleared out. Just not even a box of Pop-Tarts.
Unbelievable. Feeding frenzy.
Yeah, it's a total feeding frenzy.
The children.
Yeah. Meanwhile, I could have scooped up as many country squares as I wanted. You know,
well, nobody wants to be a country square.
Nobody wants to be a country square, as we know from the film, which was very historical and accurate and told no lies. So
I'm just very
pleased today. You know, to have this in my oeuvre of films that I have watched and seen on a screen.
That you've taken in.
That I've taken in.
Absorbed.
Yes, absorbed.
Really thought about. Yeah. Now we're going to have a long, serious discussion about this thing, because that's what it deserves, Barrett. All right, let's start.
Uh-huh.
Let's just give our review, okay? Because we refuse to bury the lead here on this podcast. We are for the people.
Do you want... Well, let's start with just a quick bit of backstory on...
Sure.
Just a little bit of... Just in case somebody is like, they typed in Unfrosted to the podcast search machine and they're like, oh, here we go. You know, we're at a little bit of a gap here.
Sure.
Last week we covered the first season of Three Body Problem on Netflix. We've got a few more weeks to fill in with some coverage before we jump into House of the Dragon season 2 type stuff.
Yes, sir.
So we're making plans to maybe go see a movie in theaters, something a little bit more relevant, a little bit, you know, juicier to latch onto.
Possibly Civil War.
Later in the month, we will have both the season documentary season 2 of The Jinx will be wrapped at the same weekend that The Sympathizer is wrapping. So we'll be able to combine those two shows into a nice little digestible podcast for you. But we kind of needed something this week.
Oh, yeah. No, we reached for this.
And Jerry Seinfeld, maybe you saw his SNL appearance a couple weeks ago or have seen one of the many viral clips of him doing interviews or podcasts, has been doing too much press.
Or commencement speeches.
Yes. Yeah. He's been doing a lot of press.
He's everywhere.
He is everywhere for this movie. And it debuted on Netflix, and it's the number one movie on Netflix. So it at the very least, it is being talked about. It's a little zeitgeisty. It's at least got a conversation happening around it. It's Jerry Seinfeld's directorial debut at age 71 or whatever he is. So it's, you know, there's some stuff, and we needed something. So it was available to us on the old Netflix app, and it made sense for us to cover it. So
he's 70 years old, which I did not realize. Another added element of this thing, you and I, huge Seinfeld guys, huge Seinfeld fans. I think you're one of the
Indeed.
Only people, aside from my dad, that has every single season on DVD.
I did. I bought every season on DVD back in the old DVD days.
We've both watched and spent a ton of time with Jerry Seinfeld.
Yeah.
And I think we greatly appreciated Seinfeld as a show. We
Still
also
did.
Love Curb Your Enthusiasm, yep. right? Which, you know... Jerry's not as heavily involved in, but his writing partner, Larry David, was.
Right.
And Jerry has his cameos and his appearances in the later seasons of Curb. So it's not like this thing wasn't in our alley.
Right,
like it's just, at one point, like a couple weeks ago, I was like, I'm not watching this.
Right, right.
I'm just not watching it. And then I was like, well, we do have kind of an open schedule on OCC right now on the podcast. So, you know what? Screw it. I'll watch Unfrosted.
Yeah, yeah.
I want to note, you said it's the number one movie on Netflix. I saw a headline. It's from Forbes. Jerry Seinfeld's Unfrosted has worst debut of any Netflix number one this year. It says, comedian Jerry Seinfeld forayed into writing and, for the first time, directing a feature film with the release of a critically panned Pop-Tarts origin story film on Netflix that debuted at the top of the streamer's charts this week, but it was also Netflix's least watched number one film of the year so far. And if you feel like digging further, you can go see the other number one films of the year, and well, some of them are...
Did you know that they're posting views now?
Oh, really?
Number of views?
Is that part of like the old...
Like if you Google Netflix top 10 and pull up the top, and it'll take you to the Netflix website where they have the top 10 listed, and they've got like either global, I think global views.
Yeah, this was 7 million plus viewers. That what in the time frame that gets it judged as number one or whatever.
Yep, yep.
I think the next closest number one was like 10 million plus.
Okay.
So, and it was something I'd never even heard of. So let me just, it's number one on Netflix, but what I'm saying is that doesn't really mean
soft.
Dick.
It was still kind of soft.
Yeah. The synopsis of the movie is it's Michigan, it's 1963. It's Kellogg's and Post, sworn cereal rivals, racing to create a pastry that will change the face of breakfast forever. A tale of ambition, betrayal, sugar, and menacing milkmen. Unfrosted stars, writer, director, Jerry Seinfeld. So what did you think of the movie overall?
Okay.
Before we talk about all the characters and the happenings, what did you think?
So, Ross, I really, really, really want to zag here.
Which way is zagging? I don't even know.
I'm going to end up having to qualify it a little bit, but I didn't think this was terrible.
Okay.
And through the first 20 minutes of the movie, I watched this in two parts, by the way.
So did I.
I watched about 45 minutes on Monday night and then the second half of it last night.
Same.
About 20 minutes in, I was like, okay. All right, like this is, I am okay with what is happening here. This is a kind of a fun little movie. It's got a lot of jokes. It's got a lot of recognizable faces. People are having fun making this. It is not taking itself too seriously. It's not going to have some love story to tag along and like make it more filmy than it needs to be. And then I think somewhere around the, we have to go to Puerto Rico to get the sugar.
Yeah.
And now Bill Burr is doing JFK. I was like, "All right, it's losing me a little bit." And as soon as the Double Mint Twins pop up, and Bill Burr says that he's going to excuse himself for a little executive privilege, that's when I paused on night one.
I didn't even make it that far. I did 30 minutes night one, an hour night two.
If it had kept up its quite zippy pace, I might have just watched the whole thing on Monday night because I was kind of feeling it. I was feeling it a little bit. Now at the same time, zany is an understatement here.
Oh yeah,
and I'm not positive who this movie was made for.
That's one of my big questions because it's one of the silliest things I've ever seen.
And so at the end of the day, probably the word that I would have to choose first to describe this movie is forgettable. But all in all,
that's not good.
All in all, like I won't think about this movie again.
Well, yeah.
But all in all, I kind of liked what it was trying to do.
Yeah.
I liked that it wanted to be a fun, zippy, hour and a half comedy film like we used to get back in the day that didn't take itself too seriously. If it had a love story, it was like a C plot that didn't mean much.
Right.
And like, let's just be funny. Like, let's just write some fun stuff. Let's have some fun. Let's tell the story. Let's do the little parody, let's do the little like flippy thing where like we make the simultaneously we make the cereal wars like the space race and also have some Vietnam War stuff happening because it's the 1960s. Like there was some good stuff in here. I just don't know if it like totally, you know, hit the mark for what it was for executing highly. At a high level on all of that it wanted to do.
So my first night, my first sitting, I watched this thing dead sober. Dead sober. Like I said, got about 30 minutes in.
Yeah.
And I might have had a couple of chuckles, right?
Yeah,
you know,
yeah,
there's
yeah.
some laughs here and
sure,
there.
Yeah.
A lot of really dumbass jokes, but also some good jokes on occasion. Night two, I was like, I can't do that again. So I took an edible. And it was, I'd say, 50% more enjoyable. A little high.
Okay.
Because this is a throwback 1990s
yeah.
goofy-ass comedy
yeah.
That almost doesn't make sense in this era.
It does not make sense in this era.
Part of the reason I'm confused about who it is aimed, like this is, if you're just like a casual listener, you know, here for whatever reason, when you create something, whether you're writing a book or making a movie, one of the first questions you have to ask yourself is kind of, who is this for? Who is going to care? Like, that is, if you're doing what Seinfeld did here, which is making something for Netflix,
or
it's
even,
like, who is this aimed at?
Yeah, and even, why are we making it?
Right, sure. What's the point? Yeah. Which, for this one, I'm not really sure. Just fun, I think, was the point.
Okay.
Good old-fashioned fun.
And I guess I do, I mean, like, I told Laura, right, while we were watching, like, one of the bits on throughout Seinfeld, just a recurring kind of thing, is Jerry loves cereal.
Yeah,
and I think that's
obsessed
just a,
with cereal.
I think that's just a Jerry thing, is that, well, he loves cereal.
But what that's what's strange about this is it's not really about, it's about cereal companies, sure, but it's about the Pop-Tart specifically.
But there's a lot of cereal stuff happening.
Sure, yeah.
Yeah,
but why not just make a cereal movie? That, anyway, the reasoning for picking Pop-Tarts was a little strange to me and lost on me. But the 90s throwback comedy thing, this comes out in 2024. I think the budget was something like $15 million.
Okay.
It was not expensive.
Yeah.
It was not pricey.
Yep.
Regardless of the 67 cameos and comedians in this thing.
It feels like they were probably able to get everybody that came through to be on board, because I, like, not joking, I feel like this movie probably took 2 weeks to shoot, maybe three.
And this movie doesn't exist if it's not Jerry Seinfeld at the helm. He has so much power, respect, and money.
Yep.
That's why this thing exists, and that's why he's able to get 50 different A-listers in this movie that is silly as hell. But the level of comedy, and I don't mean to insult anybody who's here who's like, I really liked this thing. Barrett is saying he didn't hate it. I was watching it, and I'm like, I feel like this would be really funny if I was like 10 or 12 years old.
Okay.
Because it's just really, really goofy and silly.
Yeah.
And there are a lot of adult jokes peppered in, which made it even more confusing trying to think. But I'm having a hard time believing there's like a ton of, I guess, look, I've said it before. Not every movie needs to be super serious. Not every movie needs to be self-serious. Not every movie needs to be smart. Not every movie needs to be witty. And this is none of those things, right? Like, that's Seinfeld, the TV show, was very witty. Like, there was a lot of silliness, but it was smartly written.
Very smartly written, yes.
And while very goofy, Jerry was kind of the goofiest thing there.
Yep.
Like, Jerry himself was, you know, admittedly, not really an actor, right? He was just kind of being himself and pulling it off as best he could. But this didn't have, like, the wit that Seinfeld had. This was, like, mostly silly. And silly is, like, the nicest word I can pick. It was stupid. It was some stupid shit. Like, this was some dumb shit. And that's okay.
Yeah.
That's okay. But what I'm curious, like, does Seinfeld think this is a genuinely good comedy? And I think he does.
I think he does.
Yeah. He's 70 years old. He's had more success than really anyone ever making comedy. I don't know if he's capable of recognizing that this is like a silly, stupid movie.
Well, I think this recent press tour that he's been on also has if we didn't kind of already know this by the comedians in cars getting coffee stuff, but like Jerry Seinfeld has reached the level of age and wealth where he is quite arrogant, quite sure of himself. And like, there's no.
He's been that way for 20 years.
Yeah, and I don't think there's much self-reflection happening when it comes to what he's doing out there.
He's a little pompous.
He's a little pompous. He's a little, just kind of like, just kind of tone deaf in a lot of ways.
He's a boomer now.
He's a boomer now. Yeah, and so regardless of whether you like are totally like you can totally agree with him on his takes on like cancel culture or wokeness or whatever else he's been kind of like, you know, on a rant about, but like even so, it's just that hasn't fit with like the promotion of this movie. Even
it doesn't really make sense.
It's not like this movie is like super ultra edgy and like pushing the envelope of comedy.
No, not
in
at
fact,
all.
It's the opposite.
It's the total opposite. Yeah.
It's almost proof that you can do comedy that doesn't even come close to being woke.
Like almost nothing about this was remotely offensive.
No. And the other weird piece is that there's January 6th jokes.
Yeah.
Here. The whole ending is a reference to January 6th. So like it's
having Tony the Tiger, Thurl Ravenscroft, dressed in the the helmet thing was an absurd reference to put in this movie. I was just like, I don't mean that from like the standpoint of like, oh, we shouldn't make jokes about that. I mean that from the standpoint of it made no sense.
No, it was
being in a movie about Pop-Tarts.
They're based in the 1960s.
It was insane.
Yeah, it was really, it was very strange.
Just a very bizarre decision.
So again, so just all that to say, like, yes, I do think that Jerry thinks that this was a great success and a great, hilarious film that he's made here. It's a little discombobulated and like a little too zany for its own good.
Like, this could never do a theatrical run, dude.
Absolutely not. I don't think it was meant to. It's an hour and a half, which is awesome. Please, more movies. Hour and a half, hour 45 minutes. Like, let's get back to some of that. Like, not every movie needs to be 2 hours and 20 minutes long. But, I don't know. You could see versions of this movie that do like that just try to be like a little smarter or a little bit
like higher level.
Yeah, like a little wittier. I think you could have it could have been something. Like even if it had just been slightly more historical, right? Because this was very clearly, you know, Steve Schwinn, the inventor of Schwinn bicycles, did not die in a Pop-Tart explosion.
What?
Right.
What? Like, what was the point of like, okay. And that's, dude, okay. I watched B-Movie recently with my kids.
Okay.
Okay. That's Seinfeld's, mm-hmm. right?
Yeah. Yeah.
B-Movie for the first 45 minutes is a very solid animated film.
Mm-hmm.
And then it kind of derails all over the place. And like, you're sitting there for another 45 minutes, like, okay, this thing could have been over.
Yeah,
45 minutes ago. That's what happened here. Like, this probably could have been 30 minutes. Like, it could have been a TV show. Definitely could have cut 30 minutes out of it or 45 minutes out of it, depending on. But it just, like, assembling the board of dudes where Steve Schwinn gets brought in and there's, a random Nazi.
All right.
And, like, Chef Boyardee and James Marsden is there.
Jack LaLanne.
That was so unnecessary. They never did anything.
Well, they each come up with one thing that
then leads to the big
Pop-Tart. Yeah, yeah.
Again, just kind of stupid, and that's fine.
Or the Trat Pop, should I say? And see the
Trat Pop.
Here's another problem with it, with what this movie did. It was so clearly not historical. Like I watched The Crown. When I watched The Crown,
yeah,
I'm like, what the fuck, you know? And then I'm like immediately Googling like what
did
actually
this happen?
What
did
actually
this happen?
Happened yeah. And then it's like, oh yes, a bunch of this shit is true. Here's where they maybe took like some creative liberties. Here I didn't even look up the history of the Pop-Tart
because you were just
because
like,
I was like,
this is
adds to the forgettable part of it is that like obviously, Tony the Tiger, Thurl, Ravenscroft or whatever, and a bunch of dudes playing Snap, Crackle, and Pop didn't January 6th, the Kellogg's office.
Right.
So, Steve Schwinn didn't die in the toaster accident.
Right.
I didn't even bother to look up whether, you know, Stankowski or whatever Melissa McCarthy's character's name was, like, did they actually bring in a NASA person to help? Was it actually named the Trat Pop to begin with?
Yeah,
like,
you lose all interest in the facts.
I lost all interest in it because it goes so far into the nonsensical, clearly didn't happen stuff.
Which then, when you're at that point, it's like, why even screw with historical context at all? Because it just gets too confusing and convoluted along the way. Where
right.
I'm like, well, some of this actually happened. Like, they did invent the Pop-Tart. The movie ends, and I'm asking questions like, did they even have a race with Post? Was that even real? And like at that point, I would have to Google so many different questions to figure out what was nonsense and what wasn't. That like, I'm not wasting my life on that. Like that was frustrating. That was a frustrating element of this.
I feel like the two things that were true in this movie was that, or the one thing that was true in this movie is that Kellogg and Post were making a similar breakfast pastry at the same time.
And one worked
they
out.
They released at the exact same date. And Pop-Tart crushed and Country Squares was a flop and went away.
Yeah.
Like I think that's all true. I'm pretty certain that's true. Everything in between, no clue.
Yeah. Just strange.
How about the little, was it a Joker reference or a Taxi Driver reference when Cabana shows up on Jimmy Carson and Warhol pops up
oh,
and
yeah.
shoots him.
Yeah, that was that. It had gone so far off the rails at that point. What did he get saved by? The Pop-Tart wrapper?
The wrapper, the Pop-Tart, the foil wrapper.
At that point, I was like, please end this. Please make it stop.
Dan Levy pops up as Andy Warhol.
Yeah.
And commits attempted murder on
live TV
on Bob Cabana on the Johnny Carson show.
There were a bunch of random references to movies, some of which I picked up, some of which I certainly didn't, but I could tell like, okay, that's a reference to something that he just jammed in there.
Mm-hmm.
Like, yeah, look, dude, when you're Jerry Seinfeld and you've had as much success as he's had, like you can do whatever you want. I get it. Like it's fine. And if Netflix wants guys like Seinfeld and Sandler cranking out schlock, that's fine. It whatever.
Yeah.
You know, they're getting my $12 or $15 or however much it is
like
now they raise it every year.
Yeah.
But like, it's just curious to me. Because like, I know Jerry Seinfeld is a comedic genius on some level.
Was, maybe.
Was might be fair to say. And that's... It's like the world has passed him by.
Yeah.
And
yeah,
he's still trying to force us to live where he had his peak,
yes.
which was, again, in the motherfucking 90s. It's 2024, and he's putting out the you know what? One of my favorite dumbass comedies ever that's absolutely terrible is Almost Heroes, starring Matthew Perry and Chris Farley, who are both deceased. That is just a fundamentally bad movie. But I love it.
Mm-hmm.
Came out in the whatever, you know.
Right around it was the heyday. It was like 96, 97.
That's when this movie should have come out.
Yeah.
Like, that's when the time period when people were still like, yeah, I'll go watch this dumbass hour and a half comedy.
Yeah.
But like, you just don't see that much anymore.
Yeah.
I just don't think that many people are walking away from Unfrosted like, I can't wait to tell the boys at the office they got to watch this one.
No.
You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
And it just, I don't know. Again, I think if I'm 12 or 10 years old, I enjoy this at the highest possible level that can be enjoyed.
I think you're probably right. But it's like a PG. They didn't even shift it down to be completely for kids.
That's what's strange. Same thing with B-movie.
But you're exactly right, because like another one of the WTF moments in this film is like, what did we need the little the sea monkey ravioli creature?
What the fuck was that? It's in his pocket at the end.
At the end, yeah.
The whole setup was so old school. It's like him sitting at the counter of a, you know, ice cream parlor or something, and the kid next to him.
Yeah,
he's like, let me tell you a story, kid. And it's an hour and a half story.
Uh-huh.
Like, that was all very old school, right? Like, you don't see that setup used anymore. Because it got done to death in the 80s and 90s. So people left it alone. Very true throwback, this thing.
Yeah, but that little creature, the
it reminded me of Flubber.
Flubber,
that
right,
Robin Williams movie.
It was very flubberish. very flubber reminiscent. Yeah,
Flubber came out in 97.
And at the same time, he's got the German guy that's hiding all of his Nazi crimes there.
He's going to Argentina. What the fuck was that? What the fuck was that? Like, all right, so this thing has, before we get to the details of the different characters, 5.5 out of 10 on IMDb.
Okay.
42% on the tomato meter, 54% audience score on Rotten Tomatoes. So not very many people are like, Jerry Seinfeld crushed this. You know what I mean?
Yes, and I think almost to my original kind of like desire to zag, that's not awful. Those are not awful percentages on Rotten Tomatoes.
But for a Jerry Seinfeld comedy.
We get tons of stuff coming out. That, like, look up Madam Web. I thought about if we should cover Madam Web, by the way. But I'm pretty sure it's got like 12% on each. Maybe it's higher now because people are now it's almost like a cult classic.
2.6 on IMDb, which isn't good. 11% on Rotten Tomatoes. Yeah. So.
What's its audience percentage?
57.
Okay. All right. Yeah. See, I think that's boosted by people that are now watching it. Now it's a bit to watch it.
Yeah.
Like, I will watch this. I will watch Madam Web.
Yeah.
Because it's so historically bad, apparently.
Yeah.
Yeah. But anyway, I digress. 40 or 50%, 5.5, like, I'm fine with that rating because I don't hate the idea of going back to a 90s comedy movie formula. This one was too all over the place. Like, it was too, it comes back to those two original questions that we asked. I don't know who this was made for, and I don't know why it was made.
Right.
Like, it wasn't to inform us. It wasn't to do a
Reminder of a bygone era.
It wasn't like historical, non-historical fiction type stuff.
Not enough.
Like, no, not enough. Where it was like, how about look at this crazy story? We're going to retell it, but we'll add a few little creative things.
Dude, because even like as an example, a couple years ago now, at least I do a segment on the Ross Bolin podcast called "Stuff to Wikipedia When You're High," and one day I did Thurl Ravenscroft because the voice of Tony the Tiger has an insane amount of work under his belt. He's also the dude who sings "You're a Mean One, Mr. Grinch" in the original Grinch thing.
Oh, so that guy was real.
That guy is very real.
Okay.
His storyline in this movie is very fake,
uh-huh.
Which makes it stupid
because
it's like, why bring in this legendary figure of Hollywood and voice acting and then not even really give him his due and proper and have Hugh Grant playing him, which was just like, look, one of the redeemable qualities of this movie is you kind of never get bored because you're like, who's going to pop up next?
Totally.
Whose face am I going to see next? There's like legitimate, I mean, you can't even, I spent 20 minutes earlier trying to list all the actors. I ran out of time before you got here. There's just too many. There's too many fucking people. You ever get home from work and wish you could just plop down on the couch and enjoy your favorite TV show or movie without having to worry about what's for dinner? Today's episode is brought to you by Factor, and they can help with that. Warmer, sunnier days are calling. Fuel up for them with Factor's no prep, no mess meals. Meet your wellness goals in time for summer thanks to the menu of chef-crafted meals with options like Calorie Smart, Protein Plus, and Keto. Factor's fresh, never-frozen meals are dietitian-approved and ready to eat in just 2 minutes. So no matter how busy you are, you'll always have time to enjoy nutritious, great-tasting meals. Make today the day you kickstart a new healthy routine and make your life easier. What are you waiting for? Treat yourself to restaurant-quality meals that feature premium ingredients like filet mignon, shrimp, and blackened salmon. Keep that kitchen time to a minimum. Factor meals are ready in 2 minutes. No shopping, prepping, cooking, or cleaning up. None of that. Dinner time at my house can be extremely chaotic. So it's nice that on some nights when my wife and I don't feel like we have the time or energy or resources to cook, we can turn to Factor to make sure our family is still eating well. I've probably had like all 35 different meal options from Factor at this point. They're all phenomenal. Everything Factor delivers has been great. As I've said time and again, I pretty much survived on Factor in 2023 when we had a newborn in the house and cooking was just not in the cards as often as I would like it to be. So Factor is delicious, nutritious, and I have thoroughly enjoyed it for probably a year and a half now. You could, too. Head to factormeals.com/OCC50 and use code OCC50 to get 50% off your first box, plus 20% off your next month. That's code OCC50 at factormeals.com/OCC50 to get 50% off your first box, plus 20% off your next month while your subscription is active. Let's move on to who's in this and the kind of the things that happened.
Go ahead.
You got Jerry Seinfeld playing Bob Cabana. Don't even know if that's a real person.
Gotta be.
Don't care.
I do think that that's a real person.
Jim Gaffigan as Edsel Kellogg III. Jim Gaffigan was phenomenal, I would note. Melissa McCarthy as Donna Stankowski. I could take it or leave it, but that's another big name in comedy. Right?
I liked her.
Hugh Grant was Thurl Ravenscroft. He was fine, but that whole thing was weird. Amy Schumer as Marjorie Post.
Mm-hmm.
Christian Slater pops up as Mike Diamond,
the milkman.
Yeah. James Marsden as Jack LaLanne. Thomas Lennon from Reno 911 is like the random Nazi, which again was one of the stranger bits in the film. They were that's my point. Was there a random former Nazi in the crew at Kellogg's that created the Pop-Tart? Because like that's a fucking crazy story if it's the case.
Yeah.
If it's not the case, what are we doing here? Why?
Well, there's no way that like Chef Boyardee was a real person, right?
I assumed not.
As portrayed by Bobby Moynihan.
Like what the fuck? You got Jack McBrayer as Steve Schwinn, 30 Rock fame is what I consider him to be from.
Yeah.
Tony Hale pops up.
Kenneth Page, Kenneth Parcell, the page.
Yes. Tony Hale, who played Buster Bluth in Arrested Development and is also in Veep, pops up as Eddie Mink. I can't even really remember what he was.
He's got he's in 45 seconds of the movie.
Okay.
Russ.
Yeah. Yeah.
He's the ventriloquy act for the Puerto Rican gangster.
When they shot him, I was like, that is a funny moment. That's funny. And then they ruined it by showing you that they didn't shoot him. They shot the ventriloquist dummy. And I was like, and now it's silly again. You know what I mean? Like, you couldn't have just left it at this dark comedic moment.
Right.
You had to go and be like, JK.
It was just the doll.
There was a few of those moments where they were like, sorry, we're not actually doing an adult joke. This is for the kids, so we're going to clean it up. Yeah, and I was just like, oh, damn it.
Yeah.
Like, what? Like you said, Dan Levy pops up as Andy Warhol. Peter Dinklage rolls into this thing as Harry Friendly, the milkman mafia leader.
Ross, I really thought that the sea monkey ravioli, when it escapes its little aquarium, was going to, like, wreak havoc on some shit.
Like
this little thing was going to be, like nasty and, like, start, like, fucking everything up or be this some loose end that had to be tied up. No, it just creepily watches Jim Gaffigan almost make a move on Marjorie Post, played by Amy Schumer, and then is later in Jerry Seinfeld's pocket. That's it. And then the German guy and Chef Boyardee are raising it at the end as well.
And they're fighting as parents.
Yeah, so just a kid's...
Zany.
A zany kid's...
The word you used, zany, was perfect.
Yeah.
The twist is kind of hot. Like, it's...
Doing the twist, the dance move.
Yeah, I had never really thought about the twist in that light before, but I agreed.
That hip swiveling is...
If you can really crush the twist, like, the twist can low-key be quite sexy.
Okay.
Which Gaffigan cannot do, nor can Amy Schumer, but some of the people in that room were.
Yeah.
And I was aroused.
When they were getting freaky deaky at the celebration party.
And
everybody was twisting and just,
oh, yeah. Whole room full of twisters. Shout out to Twisters. That's coming out soon.
They probably played Twister.
Yeah. Dinklage got in there. Like you said, Bill Burr, JFK. It's fine. But at this point, you're like in cameo overload in the movie. You're just like, oh, my God, another. Like, do we need? And JFK is just making like inappropriate joke after inappropriate. They're basically like, JFK was a total scumbag.
Mm-hmm.
What a piece of shit. What does he ask? He's like, is Jackie still out shopping for hats?
Yeah.
I'm going to bang these two.
The Double Mint twins.
Double Mint? The gum?
It was
a gum joke?
Yeah. I guess in the 1960s, if you were a spokesperson or a mascot for a brand, you were like a big.
Like a celeb?
Yeah.
Bizarre. I love Bill Burr. We could have done without this whole bit in
later
this movie.
Later they closed out that joke in a pretty adult way, I guess, with both Double Mint twins being pregnant with their own twins.
Oh, yeah. Jesus Christ. Cedric the Entertainer shows up as Stu Smiley. Fred Armisen.
Always. I love Fred Armisen. His thing that he does, like, I'm always here for it.
Yeah.
I laughed at that part.
Yeah, he's great.
Yeah.
He's always great. And when he walked in, I was like, of course. Of course you got Fred in here. Fred's in everything. Fred was in Fallout, Barrett. Fred shows up for 10 minutes of fucking Fallout. And then, in one of the more redeeming moments of the film that somehow still went on for too long and kind of ruined itself, John Hamm and John Slattery show up. And I'll be honest with you. At this point in the movie, I was kind of half on my phone because I was like, I can't take much more of this stupidity. But 30 seconds into their bit, I was like, hold up. Are they reprising their roles from Mad Men? And I rewound the movie. I rewound Unfrosted several minutes to get back to the beginning of the bit. And I thoroughly enjoyed it until suddenly it had gone on for too long and it wasn't funny anymore.
I didn't think it went on for too long. I thought it was Melissa McCarthy's best moment in the film, her little banter with Don Draper there.
She starts to kind of hit on him.
Yeah, yeah.
I
thought this was a fun cameo to have been made. I'm shocked that John Hamm and John Slattery agreed to do it almost.
They had to do it like without actually saying, they could not say like Don Draper.
They call John Slattery's character, they call him Roger in that.
Do they really?
Yeah, they say Roger to
him. Oh, wow. I felt like they were kind of skirting around like the trademark and copyright infringement issues.
Well, maybe that's all it took. Maybe they were allowed to say like a first name, and they never say Don's name.
Yeah.
But they call isn't his name in the series Roger something?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah, I just felt like they were trying to avoid a lawsuit there throughout the course of that whole
bit. I feel
bit.
Like they may have had to get clearance regardless. But anyway, I thought this was good. John Hamm's always down to clown and stuff like this. He was a regular, like he would recur on 30 Rock and really funny bits and
low key very funny guy,
very funny dude.
Bridesmaids, he has a great role in that.
Yeah, so I liked this. I agree with you that this was one of the better moments of cameo zaniness in the film.
Still ridiculous.
This one worked better for me than Bill Burr's JFK, I'll tell you that
much.
Yeah,
yeah. Well, it made me want to watch Mad Men again.
Yeah.
I've had this conversation a few times recently, but like Mad Men was a very adult show, and I was not an adult watching it. So I feel like if I watched it now, I would have a much greater appreciation for it. I still felt like it was one of the best shows ever, but like several seasons in, I was like, okay, enough. We get it. He's a piece of shit. He can't stop drinking, and he cheats on his wife constantly, and he's a terrible fucking dad. Like, why do I need to keep watching this unfold? I love the line about like it's Jim Gaffigan's like, do they know they're just in advertising? Like, why are they so mean?
Yeah.
Because Mad Men was like, it's so self-serious.
Right.
And they take their job. They act like they're astronauts.
Yes.
And it's like, you guys make ads for fucking cereal, man. Right. Chill out. That was fun seeing them. But yeah, it kind of felt like this whole thing was just like a stage for Seinfeld to roll out all his buddies. And all the people he has connections with in the industry, like, we'll get every single person I'm cool with, throw them a bone here, give them some screen time, and make this silly-ass Pop-Tart movie. The Trat Pop? What was it?
That was what they insinuated.
Another moment where I was like...
In the film, that was the original name of the pastry.
Did that actually happen? Because if it did, this is funny. And if it didn't, why? Are you telling us it did? This is so fucking silly.
Yeah, yeah.
So they had full-on commercials made up for the Trat Pop.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. The box was designed and everything. They had to trash all those boxes and remake the boxes, Ross.
It's wasteful.
Very wasteful.
You know?
It's amazing they were able to pull it off in time. The trucks were leaving the next morning, I think.
Unbelievable. I don't think we'll ever see anything with this many...
Kyle Mooney, Mikey Day, and some dude that you'd never heard of as Snap, Crackle, and Pop.
The Rice Krispies Beck boys.
Bennett was in there for like 30 seconds, another SNL alum.
A lot of SNL folks
popping by.
Who are these dumpster diving children?
They're
just dumpster kids.
Yeah, they're dumpster kids.
That's where they get their sustenance.
You've heard about the garbage pail.
Yeah.
Kids.
Dude, they feed Jerry.
The boxcar children, right? That was another group of them. These are the dumpster kids.
Okay. They feed Jerry Seinfeld dumpster food. And they're like, you got to try this. It's incredible.
Uh-huh.
We're dumpster kids. We're in here in the dumpster. we've concocted this tart. Pastry situation.
They're there
situation.
As the bus driver tells Cabana,
they're
there for the goo.
The goo! He like drives off angrily.
Yeah, yeah. He's not getting it. He's telling him that what they're there for. He's not getting it.
Yeah, they hand...
They're there for the goo, guy.
They hand this grown man in a suit the goo, and he eats it. It's just like, I get it. But, like, God, what the fuck? It was just such a bizarre
movie. Do you think we just had better, hygiene standards for dumpsters in the 1960s? They were just a little cleaner.
I think that would be Jerry's explanation for the bit.
Yeah.
Well, also that in the 60s, like, hygiene, like, people didn't care like we do now about, like, cleanliness, especially in, like, a post-pandemic world, right?
Mm-hmm.
But, holy shit. Yeah, so it says, like, when you look it up, it's like the film is loosely based on the true story of the creation of Pop-Tarts toaster pastries. And it should have to say, like, very loosely based, right? And another element of this that makes it hit a little weird, a version of this idea elevated at or executed at a high level is, like, Barbie.
Okay.
Barbie took the IP of the Barbie doll and Mattel and built a world, a very funny but also informative and message-filled world. This was kind of like if you were just like too lazy to try to pull that off.
Yeah.
And I'm not saying everything has to be Barbie. I'm not saying it should have been Barbie. I'm just saying there's like, that's the opposite ends of the spectrum. On one end is Unfrosted doing Pop-Tarts.
Yeah.
And on the other end is Barbie making like a movie that every age group can enjoy.
Sure.
Right?
Yeah.
Little girls, grown women, men in between. Did watching this movie make you wish you were on drugs? Today's episode is brought to you by Schedule 35, the most trusted psilocybin consumer brand in North America. So listen up. Not all drugs are created equal. Psilocybin, for example, when taken thoughtfully and at sub-hallucinogenic levels, can sharpen your focus, hone your mental clarity, unleash your creativity, expand your mind, open your heart, and ease your anxiety. While you shouldn't experiment with those shrooms you got from your brother's sketchy friend, Schedule 35 takes a science-backed approach to microdosing shrooms. They precisely measure out every dose, they verify the age of every one of their customers, they ship discreetly, and they give you a microdosing regimen that allows you to enjoy the benefits of psilocybin without any of the hallucinogenic effects. Research around psilocybin has proven to help with mental health, PTSD, anxiety, focus, and depression. Studies have shown that psilocybin works by creating new neural networks in the brain, which help boost focus, creativity, can enhance your mood, and can even help fight addiction. All Schedule 35 products come with guides that make microdosing easy to understand. They're super thorough, so there's no confusion, and you know exactly what you're taking, how much to take, when to take it. Here at Bolin Media, we're always looking to improve our mental health, and myself and our producer, actually, have personally enjoyed Schedule 35's microdosing plans and been extremely impressed by the results. Schedule 35 ships all across Canada and the U.S., is the most notable brand currently in the space. All customers will need to be age verified, 19 plus in Canada, 21 plus in the US. And again, Schedule 35 is all about accurate doses, discreet shipping, and can be beneficial to those who do or don't suffer from any mental health issues. Get 15% off with the code OCC at schedule35.co. That's 15% off at schedule35.co, schedule35.co, 15% off when you use code OCC.
Yeah, I'm trying to think. I wish I could think of another comp because that is more just kind of like historical fiction or historical kind of nonfiction, but twisted. You know what I mean? But with creative licenses taken where they need to be for the benefit of the story. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Because like Barbie's like Barbie also goes into Barbie World, right? To Barbie Land, which is clearly not real.
No, it isn't. It just exists in our minds.
Exists in our minds. So, but I do hear what you're saying, and that's kind of what I was trying to insinuate earlier as well. Is that like this movie, if you pull back the zaniness and make this a little bit more serious, and actually base it in what happened, but make it funny still, and I think you can still make those little references to like it being the space race, right? There's stuff that you can still do there. But then this movie gets longer and more serious and more expensive, and I don't think that's what Jerry wanted it to do. So, but I do agree that movie would have, at least I would have understood more who that film was for. I think we would have gotten more out of it in that version.
Yeah, and then it would have been easier to tell, like, oh, well, they obviously, you know, like here, one of the obvious jokes that was obviously a joke. They didn't create life with sea monkeys and a pastry.
Correct.
That didn't happen, right? We all know that didn't happen. We don't have to look that up. But there's too many jokes that they make where I don't know if they're joking. I can't tell if it's a real thing that occurred or if it's based in reality at all. And again, once there's X amount of those, I'm like, I'm not looking all this up, bro. Yep. So then you just stop caring. And that's kind of one of the places that this movie lost me a bit. I do want to keep the context of like, not everything has to be serious. Not everything has to be high art. Some things can just be silly, stupid shit. And this is definitely that movie. It's like one of those that you put this on, you don't have to care very much. You can kind of tune in and out. You can be half on your phone. You don't have to use your brain. You don't have to think a whole lot watching the fucking Unfrosted movie, which title-wise kind of took till the very end to get why they called it Unfrosted, right?
Yeah.
Once they developed the Pop-Tart, they're like, what if we put some frosting on it? Mm-hmm. And they're like, nah. It's like, oh, okay. There you go.
Ross Bob Cabana, not a real person.
Unbelievable.
So now I'm totally like, what the hell, guys?
Dean Norris shows up as Khrushchev, the head of like the...
Oh, yeah. Shouts to Hank from Breaking Bad.
The USSR.
Yeah.
That was a bizarre attempt to tie in more historical context. Uh-huh. They had Post in the USSR.
Right, they were doing a little Cold War stuff, right?
Yeah. And then you got the Cuba stuff.
Yes.
But there's a cocaine joke in there. Where Jerry, Bob sits down at the fucking table with the dictator in Cuba or whatever.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And he like moves his foot and notices there's like white powder on the floor. And I was like, is that supposed to be a cocaine joke? But then they're talking about sugar.
Right.
So I was like, well, that could just be a pile of sugar. But in the end, he's like, so what else do you do here? And he's like, we don't want to talk. Clearly, he's a drug lord.
Right.
But also
a sugar lord.
Sugar lord.
Yeah.
Booger sugar and real sugar.
That was Puerto Rico, though. The
Puerto Ricans. Okay.
The commies are the ones that are gonna get the sugar through Cuba.
Okay.
Russia to Cuba connection. Yeah, that's what we were doing there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I like the Quaker jokes. Those were good.
Okay. That dude.
The Bowl and Spoon Awards.
Principal from Eastbound and Down, and. Also, famously, the guy that shows up to be the Thomas Jefferson impersonator, Benjamin Franklin impersonator on that episode of The Office.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Andy Daly.
There it is.
Is
Quaker
his name.
Guy. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. The Bowl and Spoon Awards. Probably not real, Ross. I'm going to guess.
I think that's safe. Yes.
Yeah.
The old Bowl and Spoon Awards, which Kellogg's owns. Turns out, in the movie.
Are you a big cereal guy?
I used to be.
Yeah?
Yeah, I'd say pretty much my whole life until, like, probably, I don't know, I think college kind of ruined it because I wasn't awake for breakfast.
Okay.
You know?
All right.
But before that, huge cereal guy.
I liked the line in here where they go to the little cereal food hall in the Kellogg Corporation.
Yeah.
And Jerry says that eating cereal is eating and drinking at the same time with one hand.
Oh, yeah.
And I was like, that's, you know.
That's clever. There's
the type of insight that I'm looking for.
Yeah. Yeah, but I grew up, Cinnamon Toast Crunch, Fruity Pebbles, Lucky Charms, those are all goated.
Yeah.
Reese's Puffs were, man, I got really hooked on those. The thing about cereal is it's not super nutritious. It's not great for you.
So the one that I buy now, I still enjoy a bowl of cereal from time to time. I like to keep it stocked at the house. But I buy from, I'm actually going to look it up just so that I don't botch this.
Is it Magic Spoon?
It's not Magic Spoon. No, it's available at like Central Market and HEB and stuff like that.
Did you know, while you looked that up,
yeah.
Did you know that, so the Kellogg in this movie is Edsel Kellogg III, but John Harvey Kellogg, who was a physician and devout Seventh-day Adventist in Battle Creek, Michigan, and I'm assuming ran the Kellogg Corporation at that point.
Okay.
He was like enormously anti-masturbation and then eventually anti-sex.
Okay.
And his goal with Kellogg's products under his reign was apparently to get people to stop being horny.
Okay. He was the original bonk.
Yeah, he was the most boring man alive. He was a vegetarian. He abstained from alcohol, tobacco, and caffeine. He believed that sex, including masturbation, was detrimental to physical, emotional, and spiritual well-being. He personally abstained from it and never consummated his marriage.
Wow.
And may have actually spent his honeymoon working on one of his anti-sex books. He and his wife kept separate bedrooms, and they adopted 8 children and fostered another 34.
Okay. See, dude.
Where was all those jokes?
This is another like kind of nail in the coffin for this film if we're gonna bury it. But like, that's fascinating. What, like, I would watch the movie about this dude,
John Harvey Kellogg.
In the actual race to create the pot. I don't know. There's so much interesting stuff. I was kind of reading through this article on Slate, I think, about like what, you know, the historical version of this. It's interesting. Like, it didn't necessarily, like, it didn't need to be changed to make it
ultra silly.
Interesting. So it's just interesting. The cereal that I like now is by the brand Nature's Path, and it's the Sunrise Crunchy Maple flavor. And it's like almost kind of, it's like granola-ish a little bit, you know, more so than like straight up cereal. But my go-to cereal as an adult, multigrain Cheerios.
Oh, okay. They're
just the right amount of sweet. They're like Honey Nut Cheerios, way too sweet. Classic Cheerios, not sweet enough.
Honey Nut Cheerios were so good. You know what
the,
I love
the
about
the multigrain? It slaps.
You know what I love about cereal?
That it's eating and drinking at the same time with one hand. Right.
My favorite part of the experience, though, is what I have called and coined the after milk.
Mm-hmm.
And it's the milk that's left behind
sure.
when the cereal is actually gone, and you have this flavored milk.
Oh, sure, hon.
Yeah, that's the hashtag yeah. after milk.
Yeah,
it's the best.
Okay.
The song at the end of this thing.
Yes.
And dance. The song and dance.
Jerry's a song and dance man.
That started going, and I was like, is this going to do? And they use it as like the credits. They're uh-huh, like, here's uh-huh. everybody that was in the movie. And after a while, I realized like, oh my God, they had to go to each of these individual shots and say like, all right, now you're going to sing this whole song.
Yeah,
and we're
going
to take bits and pieces of it and put it all together. And they had to get everybody to be completely on board with that, which I was like, good for all of them because they fully committed. But that was it was just another really like out there decision mm-hmm, in terms mm-hmm. of like, how do we wrap this thing up? Meghan Trainor and Jimmy Fallon sang that song. That's
okay.
who sings it. It's Sweet Morning Heat. I believe it is an original for, because I was like, what is this fucking song? My wife was like, I think it might be an original for this movie. I was like, why was it necessary to have this song made? How much of the budget did they out for Meghan Trainor and Jimmy Fallon to sing Sweet Morning Heat,
mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
which is obviously like a Pop-Tart reference, but yeah, I don't know. I'll say this for the film. It did make, do we have to call it a film? I'll say this for this Netflix movie. It did make me want a Pop-Tart.
It did.
When they were when they were like biting into the Pop-Tarts and tasting the Pop-Tarts for the first time, I was like, fuck. And it might have been because I was a little high at that point, but I was like, I want a Pop-Tart.
Well,
man.
I haven't had lunch now, and you describing the warmth of the and the toastiness of the Pop-Tart and then getting to taste the delicious Pop-Tart, it's making my mouth water a little bit.
Yeah.
Yeah, like I
need a Pop-Tart right now.
Do you think that this was just like some subterfuge and
just
like
to sell Pop-Tarts?
This is just a Pop-Tart selling vehicle?
I did wonder how much...
Is this a $15 million marketing campaign for Pop-Tart?
How much of the movie was like... How much of the budget was provided by Pop-Tart?
Because
if I'm Seinfeld... I'm getting some money out of Pop-Tart.
I mean, I definitely thought about how this was like low-key... weird like product placement, even if it wasn't supposed to be product placement. Like this is an advertisement for Kellogg, essentially.
Right.
Like you are getting, at the very least, as our you know, champion on X formerly Twitter, Darren Revelle, you know, would say, like this was a big marketing opportunity for Kellogg. Like this was X amount of dollars in free marketing.
Fucking Revelle blocked me in like 2019, so I have no idea what he says anymore. But okay, so I'm going to read you a couple things just to give a little more context here. The Hollywood Reporter review said, it's a straight-up comedy, no therapeutic underpinnings or civic lessons. That's funniest when it isn't trying too hard. And I agree with that. And it does, like, not everything has to have lessons. Not everything has to be, like, a guiding moral compass. And I think a lot of people have lost faith in Hollywood to provide lessons or be a guiding moral compass. And I get that. I understand. And I understand that Seinfeld
They want that. They want Hollywood to be a guy.
I'm saying there's a lot of people who don't want that.
Okay.
They don't want their movies to be like, here's what you should think and feel.
That everything has to be like pedantic
and
teaching you about social
lessons and shit. Like,
okay.
There's a lot of people who don't want that.
Right.
And Jerry Seinfeld is one of the people who believes like things should just be silly and funny for the sake of being silly and funny. Like, Seinfeld was notoriously a show about nothing.
Yeah.
You didn't walk away from that. It wasn't like South Park, where every episode ended with a moral lesson, mm-hmm. right? Which I loved about South Park, by the way. And there's a place for both of these things. There's a time and place for Unfrosted being the dumbest fucking thing you've ever seen, giving you a handful of laughs or whatever. Because, mm-hmm. again, I'm gonna say 8 to 10 laughs is what I got out of this.
Yeah, that's fair.
And there were not that many like cringe moments that made me hate myself. There were a few where I was like, "Why?
I can't wait till you put this movie at number 4
in my
your top 10
at the end of the year
because you only watched 6 movies."
There's no way that happens this year, Barrett. I'm going to be better. Number four, Unfrosted. But yeah. I mean, it was what it was, man. Like, it would, you know. I'm not making a joke or being mean. I wish it would have been an hour or less. Like, it still was too long. And that's fucking crazy for me to have to say about an hour and a half movie.
Okay. I do sort of agree with you. And again, just to go back to like one of my initial feelings, like the first 15 minutes of this, or maybe even 20 minutes of this movie, I was kind of like, okay, I liked that they just drop you into the plot and boom, you're suddenly at the Bowl and Spoon Awards and they're just like, Kellogg Post Rivalry Awards. They just get on with it. I loved that. No, like, 30-minute prologue about the origin of Kellogg and
Post. Yeah, you jump right in.
How they got to this place. So I thought that was really good. It was moving quickly. There were some silly laughs there in the early going. You know, and even in that type of thing continued throughout the movie. Like, I liked that we don't know who this Stankowski person is, but we know that she's now working at NASA, and boom, Cabana just shows up at NASA, and she's making Tang and working on space ice cream, and the dudes are fighting aliens on the moon. And then, like, oh, you don't need to work at NASA anymore. Okay, boom, we're back. Like, I appreciated that type of that type of briskness, and they felt completely untethered to like any feeling of responsibility or obligation to like ground you in any one of these moments or scenes. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And so I did appreciate that, and at the same time. Yeah, there were some middle moments in this movie that dragged a little bit for me. So that's not great for a movie that's an hour and 33 minutes long.
And I don't think Stankowski is a real person either.
Probably not if Cabana wasn't.
Unfortunately, because like just last example, I swear to God, when she's like, "Taste this," and he's like, "Ooh, tangy." And she's like, "That's a good name for it." I was like, "Oh, that's crazy!"
Right,
this woman Stankowski. Was at NASA and invented Tang, and now she's going to go help invent the Pop-Tart. That's a fucking wild story.
Yeah,
no
right.
wonder they wanted to make this movie.
Sure, sure.
That's an unbelievable story. But it was completely made up, completely fabricated, which makes me wonder, back to the question, like, why? And I guess the answer is, like, because you don't have shit better to do.
Yeah.
Which is fair. Sometimes. It's fair. I just, like, fuck.
Do you think that how much of this, I wish I had brought this up earlier, how much of making this movie for Jerry was him finally having enough with the Larry David success on Curb Your Enthusiasm, and he was like, "I have to get out there and do something. Like, I've got to put my stamp on the world again."
I don't know if it was driven by Larry and Curb necessarily, but I definitely something happened. Like, something clicked within him that was like, "I gotta put out another movie. I gotta make something else."
Yeah.
And I almost wish he wouldn't. Like,
sure.
Just getting, like, dude, I don't know. Like, there was a lot of time and resources and money spent on this thing, man.
What would you like to see next from Jerry Seinfeld?
Seinfeld reruns? Like, I just, look, like I said, I respect Jerry. I appreciate it. I also think, like we said, he's kind of a pompous dickhead. I don't like seeing him in the press. I don't like anything that is going to tarnish my version of Jerry.
Yeah, and his overall kind of legacy.
And and every time he pops out with something else, it kind of does that, and that sucks. So
yeah.
I really Seinfeld reruns to answer your question.
Yeah.
I don't. His comedy doesn't hit with me anymore.
No,
like,
no.
You know, and in the same vein, I'll say one other thing. You know, they finished rap. They wrapped. They've completed Severance season 2.
Okay, I was not aware of that.
So Ben Stiller was doing some random press, and Ben Stiller commented on the fact that Zoolander 2 was a total and utter flop.
Okay.
Bombed, right? Did you see Zoolander 2?
I did.
Did you hate it?
No. It wasn't good, but it did not tarnish the legacy of Zoolander.
Okay.
I will say that Dumb and Dumberer was far worse than Zoolander.
So I didn't watch either of these because the Dumb and Dumber and Zoolander are both like pantheon comedies
films,
for me.
Yes, totally.
And,
100%.
I don't want to fuck them up.
As they should be.
Because I know how this works. I know there's money grabs involved and shit. Anyway, point being, Ben Stiller came out and said, he was like badly hurt by how poorly Zoolander 2 did and how the audience response was like, this is dog shit.
Yeah.
And he said he felt like maybe he didn't understand what was funny anymore. And I thought that was a really cool, transparent admission as a creative.
Yep.
And Ben Stiller is doing incredible work on Severance now, so I doubt that this is something that like haunts him for the rest of his days or whatever. But I feel like there's something that happens to you as a comedian who experiences like the highest possible level of success, like Ben Stiller has, certainly Seinfeld in a sort of different way. Like, the game does pass you by.
Yeah.
Father Time is undefeated, as they say. And eventually you get to this place where it's kind of like, maybe just shut the fuck up.
Yeah.
Because
yeah.
you're going to say stuff that, like, isn't going to hit. It just makes you look like you don't know what you're doing.
That's a great, yeah. That's a really, really, really good point. And, you know, I can think of a few comedians who at one point in time were at their absolute zenith and were the funniest person in the world, and then have continued to just like be like, okay, well, that's what works and that's what's funny and that's who I am and that's what I'm going to keep doing. And now it's kind of dog shit.
And it makes it sad.
And it's hard to adapt. Now I'm trying to think of a comedian that has like, that has adapted over years and years and years and years to continue churning out like good stuff. And like, I know that Chappelle's stuff has had a level of success over the last three or four Netflix documentaries. But the fact that it is divisive, I think, is speaks to the fact that it's certainly not funny to everybody.
Dude, and if you go watch his old stand-up compared to any of the Netflix stuff,
right.
it's a completely different level.
Yeah, yes.
It's like almost like he's not even trying. He's like, I'll just say controversial shit, and that'll get me attention.
Yeah.
You know? So, like, yeah, Chappelle's a good example.
But just, really, the one I was thinking of even more was, like, that Aziz, the most recent little, the short one that he put out on Netflix a couple years back.
I still don't know what the fuck that was. Yeah, that was weird.
It was bad. It was bad.
That was really weird. Yeah. No, it's a tough game, comedy, especially to stay on top.
Yeah.
That's why it doesn't really happen.
It's such proof that comedy does evolve and change. Even more than music, right? Like, you can be Taylor Swift and you're on top of the world, and then you kind of like drop back down to earth for 3 or 4 or 5 years, and then you come back up and you're more popular than ever.
Yeah.
Right. But it's like with comedians, you reach that peak where you are the funniest comedian in the world, and then it's pretty much downhill from there.
Yeah.
Like, they're
tough to maintain that.
As far as like stand up and that type of kind of that lane of comedy, I think you can be at the top writing and developing and creating movies and TV shows for a lot longer and broader span of time. But yeah, stand-up comedy especially is very much like lightning in a bottle. You catch the moment. You're the right person for the right time. Your shit is hitting. And then it's kind of like...
it's over.
And then it's kind of like over.
Amy Schumer is a perfect example.
Yeah.
Amy Schumer was the hottest comedian in the world for 2 years. And then she started getting accusations of like stealing jokes, and like it just completely fell off a cliff. Jim Gaffigan is probably the best example in this movie of somebody who's like, I found my lane, staying in it, and I am not leaving that lane, and whoever wants to be a part of it, great, but I'm not reaching for new audiences, I'm not making new material that's outside of the box, like, I know who I am, and I'm doing my thing, and I'm having an insane amount of success with it, because, like, Gaffigan...
For longevity, you're better off not reaching the very top, you know?
Just staying... being right below it is where Gaffigan has been at, like, he's sold out arenas and shit, like, he's way bigger than people who aren't fans of him probably realize.
Yeah, that's
but
fair.
Anyway, yeah, it was just, this was a weird ride. A weird ride, Barrett.
Do you have any final comments?
On Unfrosted?
On Unfrosted?
No, I'm done.
Okay, all right.
I'm done.
I just wanted to plug Hacks, which is back for season 3 on Max.
Oh, you mean the show that they're not doing any fucking marketing for?
I guess so. At least it popped up in my algo when I opened Max to be like, hey, season 3 is back. I watched the first episode of season 3. Still a very, very, very funny show. Super well written. Awesome characters, and I'm happy to have it back in my life because it's. Speaking of comedy that's on top, it's just really, really good.
And it's not too smart. Yeah. It's not too dumb. And there's dumb jokes and smart jokes, and they're all mashed together.
There's dumb and smart jokes, and that's one of the great things about it is that there is some really dumb stuff and some really, really smart stuff.
All right, so next week we're planning on covering Civil War.
Civil War.
where we will ask, what type of American are you, apparently. I've seen the memes. I'm plugged in. The week after that, after the finale of The Jinx Part 2 airs and the finale of The Sympathizer, we'll kind of mash those both together into a podcast. Yeah. So Jinx Part 2 talk until we run out, and then The Sympathizer.
We're going to find a brilliant segue to connect those two.
Exactly. The week after that, House of the Dragon Season 1 recap. And the week after that, the week before the premiere of House of the Dragon Season 2, we will talk about the teasers, the trailers, and make predictions about Hot D Season 2.
This trailer that dropped this week.
Woo!
Got me a little excited. I'm feeling.
Oh, it did something for you?
It did.
It made it move?
Yeah.
Wow.
I was, you know, before that, I was a little reluctant to climb back into my dragon saddle, and this kind of got me ready to,
ready to ride?
Ready to mount the steed.
Yeah. We were still too far out for you,
but
that first teaser.
But not in daylight. No dragon riding in daylight, because they still haven't quite figured that out yet.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No,
it's okay though.
Looks a little strange.
Yeah. But nighttime dragon riding, I'm
best.
That's all for me.
The best, Jerry. Yeah. The best. That'll do it for today's show. Thanks for being with us. We appreciate y'all. Remember, we are available on all the audio podcast platforms, but also in full video on youtube.com/@oystersclamscockles. Go on youtube.com/@oystersclamscockles. Subscribe. Throw us a like and leave a comment if you are already on YouTube watching right now. We appreciate y'all. It means a lot. For more from me, Ross Boland, check out the Ross Boland podcast wherever you get your OCC. For more from Mr. Dudley, follow him on the Gram and X, formerly known as Twitter, @BarrettDudley. Go to BolandMedia.com/shop to grab yourself some merch. Support our sponsors. Check the description or description of this episode, details, whatever it's called. Click the link. Use the codes. Thanks for being here today. Thanks for listening. Thanks for watching. We'll be back on patreon.com/oystersclamscockles later this week. Mollusk Militia, get your hotline calls in. Give us your unfrosted takes.
Please do. Please do.
Until next time. Hello, Newman.